A podcast of the cinema.
Based on Lego construction toys.
And the novel Push by Sapphire. You're Dave White. I'm Alonzo Duraldi. We are film critics. And we do this show.
For whom?
You know what? Maybe we don't have to start every show with all of my CV. Maybe we just talk about things and, you know, just
people,
say our names.
People have to know that you're a smoky somebody and not just nothing painted blue.
Thank you, Anne Margaret.
Have you know?
Fine. I'm the film reviews editor of The Wrap, which is where you also review movies.
Yes.
I am co-host of the Who Shot You podcast on Maximum Fun.
Yes.
And co-host of Breakfast All Day, which is what used to be What the Flick.
Was that so hard?
To
toot your own horn? To blow your own trumpet? To trombone your credits, your CV, your resume?
Toot.
I think it's very important that people know. But, you know, you're out in the world. You're shaking it up. You're making things great and great. You're making cinema great again.
Don't even.
I don't know what I'm saying.
You clearly not.
So. I am distracted today.
How so?
I just have so many things going on in the kitchen, and I don't want them to ruin. Something always gets ruined.
You're always making things difficult.
I made another cake the other day, and it fell again.
I will say, it takes some doing to make a Duncan Hines cake fall. And like, it's not like we were bowling in the kitchen.
No, I was like, if you listen to Linoleum Knife and Fork, which we'll discuss later, you know the saga of my recent cake failings. And I was like, you know what? I just need to bolster my confidence and go back to a sure thing. It was Wednesday. Mm-hmm. You know, it was Wednesday. We didn't have any cake in the house. We had no sweet.
Oh, no.
We had no sweet treats, you know, to have for dessert or whatever. I thought, okay. You know, Duncan Hines, Betty Crocker, whatever the hell it was. Devil's food, chocolate fudgy, box cake.
Mm-hmm.
Cannot fail.
Can.
It sunk.
Can indeed fail.
It sunk right down in the middle. This is big concave thing.
Is it our oven?
No, it's me.
Okay.
I'm a mess.
A chocolate mess in this case.
Yes, yes. But you know what? It did not deter me. I slapped that frosting right on
there
it.
There you go, right out of the can.
And I learned, you know what you do? You know what you do with the things all sunk in the middle? Okay, so let's make you see. You got a 13 by 9 pan.
Mm-hmm.
You're that lazy, and you're just pouring all the batter into one deal.
Right.
And it sinks in the middle. Go ahead and frost the whole thing. But then...
Work around the middle.
Work around the middle. And then treat the middle like it's the molten part of a molten chocolate cake. Take a little scoop of the outside, which is done, mm-hmm. and then a little scoop of the inside, which ain't.
Like it's a little extra
combine
dollop.
Combine them in
do
one.
Do we think...
Because you are eating this out of the pan with a spoon, after all.
Do we think the lava cake was an accident that just became a thing?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So that's what I'm just telling people.
Fine.
Hey, I made a lava cake.
And it blew up all over Marcia.
Don't let anyone ever tell you otherwise. I am 40% skilled in the kitchen.
I would say 45.
Things are going wrong all the time.
But you know what? You keep getting right back on that horse, and that's what matters.
Well, I do, because I'm obsessed with eating. Because
I'm a total quitter in that department.
Well, if we both quit, then we won't eat, you see.
I see.
Don't you see?
I guess you're right.
Also, what are we going to serve people on Sunday when everyone comes over for Sunday dinner? Gotta have something.
True.
I've currently got a pork shoulder in the oven. I'm braising it in Coca-Cola. I didn't invent this.
No.
This is recipes.
Yes. People use ginger ale. They use 7-Ups.
Yeah.
There was an old, these old ads from the 50s that say, baste your meats in 7-Up.
Yeah.
And at first I thought, ew. And then I was like, well, no, it's sugar water. It's why not?
Yeah. Anyway. What about films? This
is a particularly dumb week of movies.
I just want to warn everybody.
Because we're not talking about High Flying Bird, which is the good movie this week, but you haven't seen it yet.
I haven't watched it yet.
It's on Netflix right now, so y'all
you
can
went
go
out
see this movie.
Last night. This is Sunday afternoon, where we are currently recording on a Sunday afternoon.
Yes. We are grooving.
We saw Lego 2 yesterday afternoon.
Yes, we did.
And I got back from the theater with you, and I just thought, it is Saturday afternoon. It is 4 o'clock. It is fixing to rain again. It is cold outside. I cannot stand the outfit that they have put Rebel Wilson in the giant ad campaign for Isn't It Romantic?
Well, you know, I
feel sad for her in that ad campaign because they have dressed her in the worst thing imaginable.
But I think that is her chosen color because today on my, you know, on this day on Facebook,
right,
my review of How to Be Single popped up.
Right.
And she's wearing a different outfit that is the same shade of yellow.
Banana yellow.
Yeah.
Neon banana yellow.
Yeah. Like clearly that is her, or some stylist or she herself is like, nope, this is me. This is my color.
I know she lives here in West Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
So if I run into her, I have to tell her, honey, what are they putting you in? But here's the thing. I've seen the trailer once,
mm-hmm.
and I've seen the outfit they have her in the ad campaign, and I think, I do not want to see this movie. It's going to be bad. Now, you say it's pretty good.
Yes.
Or not bad.
I'm under embargo, so I can't get into
it. Okay, well, whatever. Anyway, last night, you had to go out and see...
Yes. Isn't It Romantic?
Isn't It Romantic? I bailed.
Mm-hmm.
I decided to put on my pajamas. I decided to read an article in The Atlantic.
Not the one about Bryan Singer.
No. I don't want to upset myself.
No.
Terrifically.
I didn't want people to come away with the wrong impression.
That is
not a Saturday night
PJ's article.
That
is not a cozy thing to read on a Saturday night. Now, I read an article about why everyone in the United States is so furiously angry all the time now.
I think I know.
It's only a little more cozy than the Bryan Singer article, but
yeah,
still.
Well.
I was reading it while I was eating dinner, but then I sat down and I thought, okay, he wants me to watch the Steven Soderbergh movie on Netflix. But you know what I want on a Saturday night when I'm cozy in the house in my pajamas? I want something from TCM. I want to watch some old black and white movie from TCM. That's what I want.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we had two saved in the TiVo.
Mm-hmm.
Topper.
Yeah.
And Young Mr. Lincoln.
Hmm.
Young Mr. Lincoln is a John Ford film from 1939. Stars Henry Fonda as Abraham Lincoln. It is not about the Civil War.
No.
It's about Young Mr.
Young
Lincoln.
Young Mr. Lincoln. It's in the title,
it's
Dave.
Like the Young Indiana Jones.
Right.
This is a story of
without
when he wore the hat.
Oh, he has the hat on.
He had that hat on.
Oh, okay.
Now, I don't know if that hat is an anachronism. I don't know if John Ford was playing fast and loose with facts. I mean, you know, who knows what the facts were about Mr. Lincoln?
Playing fast and loose with the millinery facts.
Was he truly in love with Ann Rutledge?
Or was it Joshua Speed?
Or was it Joshua Speed? To whom was Lincoln's heart given? Who knows? I like to think he was our best gay president. That's just
yes,
me.
Because it really can't just be Buchanan.
There can't just be one.
Yeah.
In 200 whatever years.
Right.
All right.
Buchanan's nickname, by the way.
Yeah.
Aunt Fancy.
No.
Yes.
In real life?
Yes.
Who called him that?
I don't, like, I think his political enemies are like, you know, scurrilous newspapers.
Really?
Aunt Fancy, yes.
Oh, man.
Also my drag name.
Was it a derogatory nickname?
Yes,
I guess it was.
Of course it was a derogatory
nickname. Like, if you called me Aunt Fancy now, I'd be like, well, thank you very much.
Yeah, no, they did not mean
I,
it as
I
a
feel comment. Fancy today.
This t-shirt has no grease stains
right,
on it.
Right, I haven't spilled anything on this t-shirt. I haven't farted in public once today.
How is there not a band called Aunt Fancy?
Well, there was a queer band in the early 90s called Extra Fancy.
That's true.
Yeah.
I guess maybe they didn't want to be confused for that.
Right. Aunt Fancy.
Aunt Fancy.
Oh, man. I love history. Anyway, so I'm watching Young Mr. Lincoln. I'm like, I'm not watching the Steven Soderbergh movie. I don't care how good it is. I just want something old.
All right.
And I watched that. It's about how he's defended two brothers who were accused of murder.
I see.
And you know, the person they murdered was, they, well, they didn't do it.
Law and Order Springfield.
And he was a terrible person who harassed and attacked women in the town. So, one could say he had it coming. But what a good movie this is. It's, well, first of all, it's in the National Film Registry.
That's not necessarily a guarantee of things. Sometimes they're there for...
Historically important.
Historically important, but yeah. That doesn't always mean good.
Well, it's very good, too.
Birth of a Nation is historically
okay,
important.
Okay, you're right, I guess. Yeah. This is very good. You know, John Ford made more good than bad, I'd
sure
say, in his life. This is part of my ongoing watch as many of the films of John Ford as I possibly can project. Right. It's going to take
the rest of your life.
The rest of my life. He was prolific. And
you haven't even started reading the Peter Bogdanovich interviews yet.
Henry Fonda is really good. Supporting cast is really good. It's very earnest and very sort of, you know, myth building.
Right.
But yeah, absolutely satisfying.
Ford had a company, like the way that Preston Sturges did, right? Like Jane Darwell and people like that would always pop up in things.
That's my DVD pick of the week.
All right. Well, we'll get that out of the way early.
But we'll get to...
High Flying Bird.
We'll get to High Flying Bird next week.
Because you know who wrote it, right?
Who wrote High Flying Bird?
Yeah.
I don't.
The Daryl Alvin McCraney who wrote Moonlight.
Well, that's very exciting.
Yeah.
No, I do want to watch it.
It's really good.
I just wasn't in the mood for something new and challenging. Exactly.
But like, you know, Andre Holland, who was in The Nick, is amazing in it. And Zazie Beetz. You like Zazie Beetz? Yeah, it's real good. But we'll talk about it next week.
Come on, Dave. Zazie Beetz. You like her. Come on now.
Here comes the airplane.
All right. Lego 2. Yeah.
What a letdown.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not as bananas about Lego 1 as a lot of people.
Neither am I.
I thought it was very funny and clever, and I liked the sort of crazy mix of all the different kind of pop culture stuff. I didn't like the sort of twist where the message of the movie is explained to you in a way that the movie had pretty much already done by that point.
My memory of this 5-year-old film is that you and I liked the same things and disliked the same things.
Okay.
The ending.
Yeah.
Where we learn, first of all, we learn that this is all like some kid and his dad and how they having, you know, play Legos with me, dad, and be in my life. And
the cat's in the cradle.
Yeah. Will Ferrell, you know, the dad. And it just, you know. It kind of let the air out of the movie.
For me, a lot of people I know loved that twist, but it bugged me.
No, you know why I didn't like that twist? Because I don't want feelings in my Lego movie. Why should I have to have those?
Teach me
things about life. Plastic toys teaching me things about life. No, thank you. I've got the great cinema of the 20th century for that.
So this one is about the...
Is more of the same, only less good.
Kind of. I mean...
Explain what happens.
Okay, so...
Give them a little plot.
So we're reminded that Lego Movie 1 ends with, you know, that the kid now gets to play with the dad's meticulous, you know, Lego world, but that he also has to play with his younger sister. And so she comes in with all these Duplos.
Yes.
And then that, you know, in this movie, basically, it becomes like Mad Max Fury Road.
These children have not aged.
Yeah.
By the way.
Well, we don't see the sister in the first one. This one, she's Brooklyn Prince.
In the Lego universe, these children, this movie takes place 5 minutes after the last one.
Yeah. Yeah. Although, but the same kid is playing the son.
Right.
5 years later. Right. So the Duplos come in and wreck everything, and so now, like, Bricksburg or whatever has become Apocalypseburg, and it's this sort of grim wasteland. And then along comes some masked alien, I forget her name, who whisks away several people, and Emmett has to go chasing after them, and they're in this other universe that is ruled over by a queen who swears she's not evil, voiced by Tiffany Haddish, and they're all concerned about the possibility of Armageddon, which is basically that mom is going to, like, take all the Legos and put them in storage bins if the brother and the sister can't learn to get along and play together.
Yes.
I have seen several pieces, including our friend Ingu Kang's, about how this movie it has a lot to say about toxic masculinity, and mm-hmm. it does, to its credit. It does sort of talk about, like, why, you know, these grim and gritty remakes are always just, like, really sort of excessively bleak, and how,
right.
you know, you lose the sense of fun, and like, you know, the you know, it's a movie that seems to be aimed at, like, every, you know, anti The Last Jedi troll on Twitter, you know. So, yeah, fundamentally, I appreciate that aspect of it, and that's what it's going for. But as a movie, I was bored out of my mind. I for the first half hour, I just kind of sat there, and it wasn't all that funny, and it wasn't all that novel or clever. And I turned to you thinking, is it just me? And you were like, no, this is just not a thing.
I want to say what's good about it.
Okay.
Just for a moment. It is occasionally funny.
Sure.
Not enough, but occasionally funny. It has a lot of clever messaging.
Yeah.
About the very subjects that you were talking about.
Lord and Miller, by the way, wrote but did not direct this one.
It is, as films like this always tend to be these days, just gorgeously, meticulously animated. Like, I found myself just looking at it and thinking of all the hard work that went into this digital universe.
Yeah, like the queen played by Tiffany Haddish is this shapeshifter and is constantly, like,
yeah.
turning into...
There's no... There's something always in motion
yeah.
here, like, even when it doesn't have to be.
It's like this sort of floating face with all this just sort of, like, rippling, changing Lego stuff around it, which is just always fun to watch.
We've seen the children who grew up watching Filmation cartoons on Saturday morning.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, these immobile, expressionless, cheap, ugly things.
Right.
Grow up to make the most expressively beautiful
right.
animated films.
Embracing the new technology and
yeah.
getting the
and
most
just
out of
really
it.
Going deep with this stuff.
Yeah.
So when the movie was boring, and that was often, I was admiring the craft
sure.
of it, and thinking about all the, you know, hundreds of possibly even thousands of people employed to make this thing move.
Yeah. And it's not stop motion. It's like CG designed to look like stop motion.
It's CG designed to look like stop motion. Yeah. So But it just, there's this hollow core. I was impatient and antsy enough with its boringness. Trying to
its dullitude.
Find a better word than that. That it made me sort of retroactively wonder what it was I liked about the first one.
Yeah, it's that kind of sequel.
It throws so much at you in terms of the cultural references, the jokey in-jokes that are inside other in-jokes, mm-hmm. the, you know, almost gratingly witty cleverness.
Well, like, there's an entire character who basically exists to address the fact that, like, Chris Pratt now is not nearly as fun as Chris Pratt used to be.
Missed opportunity, really. They could have gone so much harder on the reckoning of these two people.
Right.
Because there's a character voiced, Emmett, voiced by Chris Pratt. Mm-hmm. And then there's a character named Rex Dangerous, who is also voiced by Chris Pratt. And he's kind of garbage.
Yeah.
And they even say to you, oh, here's what this guy is. He used to be cuddly and chubby and funny and delightful, and now he's like a dinosaur chiseled. Trainer and yeah. chiseled and a jerk. And you're like, oh, what? Are we going to get, like Chris Pratt critique in this film? No, you're not. You're getting a little gentle ribbing.
Yes.
But not nearly.
You're getting Chris Pratt as being a good sport.
Right. Because what I really wanted was, let's talk about Chris Pratt, shall we? The hell is going on with him?
Yeah. Not in this.
Because here's the thing. Just real life aside here.
Yeah.
He hasn't done anything wrong necessarily in real life. Think about it. What has Chris Pratt done wrong, actually, other than get divorced?
Anna Faris's heart.
We're all team Anna Faris on this, obviously. Yeah. But, you know, like,
I just, you know, he's gonna be running for some Republican office within a decade or so. Like,
I just have, he's marrying
into the Schwarzenegger Kennedy clan.
I have this weird feeling in my gut about him.
Yeah.
About, you know, the guy I used to know on Parks and Rec, mm-hmm. and the guy that's
talking a lot about Hillsong.
Exactly. So, hey, listen, I'm not here to cancel Chris Pratt.
No.
Because again, he hasn't done anything.
Right.
He's done nothing wrong. Except lose weight, which is irritating.
Boo. And
divorce someone cool, which is irritating. And marry into a family that I just don't trust.
Yeah. And, you know.
Well, that isn't even happening yet, but it's going to.
And the Jurassic World movies are not.
And the Jurassic World movies are bad, and so was Passengers.
Oh, I forgot about Passengers. Woo.
I'm kind of folding my arms with Chris Pratt these days. And so when I see a character come into a movie like this, and he's, like, a jerk, I think to myself, all right, let's go. Go in. Yeah, do it. And then they don't. And I think, hey, why not? And then I thought, wait, because Chris Pratt hasn't done anything wrong. You're just feeling itchy about him.
Yeah.
And you don't know why.
There's no one thing.
And that's a failing on my part, no, honestly. I think
if he had done any one of the things that you just listed, it'd be like, eh, okay, whatever. People get older, they change.
But he's doing all of them at the same time.
He's doing all of them at the same time. So, yeah.
It's not fair to Chris Pratt for me to be like, prove that you're not turning into a dick.
You have to wonder, like, where's the pod, you know?
Right. This is on me. Currently, February 10th, 2019, this is on me.
Okay. But anyway, this is a minor issue that
This is a side digression.
Yes.
This has nothing to do with the movie necessarily.
Right.
I think sometimes there are films that are so invested in being funny in a way that doesn't aim at anything.
It erases the stakes.
It's just diffuse, you know? And correct, I believe it erases the stakes.
Also, the more time I spend in this world, the less I understand the rules of it.
Well, there don't seem to be any.
Like, is everything happening because the kids are doing it or not?
Yeah.
Like, do these Legos have independent free will? Like,
well, apparently they do, because in the real world they can still get up and move.
Yeah. I just find it.
When you see them tossed into the real world, right, they can still move.
Yeah. It's a little baffling.
And I'm thinking, I have no idea what's going on anymore.
Right.
And I got to say one thing. I really did not appreciate that Elliot Smith joke. And it's a spoiler. They make a joke about Elliot Smith in this movie. I don't want to hear a joke about Elliot Smith.
Right.
I loved Elliot Smith.
I don't.
I do not think he deserves to be. A winky in joke for hip dads. Hey, cool dad. I just made a joke about Elliot Smith. Because I just said Elliot Smith. Doesn't that make you feel cool? Because you know who Elliot Smith is, and perhaps you really liked him. Oh, I'm sorry. He's dead. But he's still a joke in this movie.
I don't think he's being mocked.
He's not being mocked, but he is
being cited.
He is being cited
for humor.
He is being cited for humor. I'm not into that at all.
Fair enough.
Don't come for Elliot Smith. Seriously. Like, I don't have a sense of humor about him. It's a tragic, tragic story.
I will say one other thing in the film's defense, though.
Yeah.
Has one of the best closing credits sequences.
I liked those credits.
Since Skidoo.
I liked those credits. Yeah.
So if you do see the film, stay.
It's not awful.
No. It's just...
I really...
Unexceptional.
I wanted more. I wanted there to be stakes. I wanted there... Because it looks great.
Yeah.
That stupid song is... funny.
The catchy
song is funny, although it's not stuck in my head.
Stuck in mine.
I like
Tiffany Haddish. It has a lot of back and forth with Will Arnett that's fun.
Right.
Which, you know, who knows, they were in the same room when they did it.
Yeah. Maya Rudolph.
It pops in for pops a second.
In live action. I like her. Yeah. I like the Lego banana that always is just shrieking and upset.
Yes.
That's... that's me.
Did you notice who... you are the Lego banana. Did you notice who played the younger sister?
No.
Brooklyn Prince. From the Florida Project.
I did not...
Yeah.
I didn't catch her. Well, listen, that kid... If she can go from that kid in Florida Project to being... a sweetly innocuous child in this movie,
uh-huh,
then she's an actress.
There you go.
Yeah. And a chameleon, because I didn't recognize her at all.
Cold Pursuit.
All right. This sucks. Cold Pursuit is a bad film.
I liked it a little more than you did, but I'm still not... loving it.
All right. Liam Neeson, and we'll talk about him in just a minute when we're done talking about the movie.
Yes.
Liam Neeson is a snowplow driver in Colorado. And his job is basically to keep the roads clear so people can get to this fancy resort. He drives a giant snowplow through like 20-foot tall banks of snow like he's, you know. And there are some local drug kingpin people. The local drug kingpin is this meticulous, hyper detailed, you know.
He's your classic slick-haired yuppie.
Touchy.
Anal retentive.
Yeah. Eddie,
overbearing dad.
And Liam Neeson's son gets mixed up in, inadvertently,
drug things.
Yeah, drug stuff. He doesn't even know what's going on.
Yeah,
it's happening around him, and he doesn't know he's in it.
And frankly,
so they murder him.
I didn't even understand why the son got targeted. Like, there's one line of dialogue that sort of gets blurted out by somebody else under duress. I'm like, okay.
Wrong place, wrong time.
Yeah, okay.
That's kind of it.
Yeah, he was a baggage handler at the local airport.
Yeah. Liam Neeson learns that his son has been drugged. A heroin overdose was the official cause of death. But he has been murdered.
Right.
So he goes out to find the people. Kills them one by one.
Works his way up the ladder.
Kills the bad guys. And each time a bad guy gets killed, and also each time a not bad person gets killed who just happens to be in the way.
Yeah.
Each time a person dies, you get a card with their name on the screen.
Yeah.
And their nickname, because everyone's got a nickname in this movie.
Yeah.
It's all like Smooky and Florpy and whatever. Like
mobster type
Speedo
names.
And, Play-Doh, whatever their names are.
And usually they get a cross, but then later, like, there's a Star of David, and then later there's, like, you know, indigenous people who have a different symbol. And,
Isn't it hilarious?
Well, this is a remake of a movie called In Order of Disappearance.
Yeah.
That does the same thing, apparently. I haven't seen it. But in the closing credits, when they run the cast, they're listed in order of disappearance. So they're literally listed in order of when they die in the movie.
Yes. So it is the least exciting, least inventive of all the Liam Neeson action revenge films.
Oh, no.
Yes?
It's not worse than Taken 3.
All right, Taken 3 is horribly bad.
That's always the...
Taken 2 is
also... That's always the bar.
Taken 2 is also quite bad.
Yes.
And Taken 1, to answer someone's question on Twitter this week, who's not... The name is not in front of me, but I'm just going to answer this question now. Are there films that you enjoy that you disagree with politically or philosophically or ideologically? Yes, Taken.
Taken, yeah.
Because, first of all, it's utterly xenophobic and racist.
Yes.
And it's about, revenge killing. And if Last House on the Left didn't teach us anything, and it should have, is that revenge is futile.
And it's also creepily obsessive about a white girl's virginity.
It is that as well.
Chuck emailed us this question as well. In addition to somebody on Twitter, all of these
strikes against Taken,
mm-hmm.
it sure does carry you along and make you bloodthirsty, don't it? Mm-hmm. It does.
Totally.
Yeah. Also, The Fountainhead, which is a terrible film. Not a terrible film, is a really great film.
Yes.
With a repellent ideology.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Good examples.
Patricia Neal and...
Gary Cooper.
And Gary Cooper, yeah.
Gary Cooper, as my mother always called
him. So there's the answer to that question. Anyway, so yeah, you're right. Taken 2 and Taken 3 are worse than this.
Yeah.
But I was just waiting for something interesting to happen here. And it's just a laundry list of killings that aren't even cool killings. Like if killing is going to happen in the movie and that's the point of the movie, make the killings cool.
I did not see the the original movie, but this one very much seems to be really wanting to be Fargo. Like, really wanted to go for that sort of Coen Brothers mix of like nihilistic action and bleak humor. Fargo, the movie, and the TV series, frankly, have both managed to pull off that combo.
This movie does not pull off that combo.
It does not.
The stuff's not funny.
I think there are funny things in the movie, and I think there are some. I think some of the violent stuff is interesting as well, but they don't dovetail together well at all. Like it's an abrupt shift constantly.
Yes.
And so what you're left with then is, again, I think like you were saying before, if you're too jokey, it diminishes the stakes, mm-hmm. and if you're too brutal, then you feel bad about laughing. So right. it's you got to get it just so, or else it's not going to work. And this one doesn't work, I don't think.
No.
But I do think there are component parts of it that are okay.
Liam Neeson doesn't even seem to be interested in being there.
Not particularly. No, it's not one of his better performances. There are some fun people in the supporting cast. The guy who plays the drug kingpin, Tom Bateman.
Tom Bateman. He's a British actor. He's good.
Yeah, he's good. He was in the Amazon Vanity Fair miniseries.
And the woman who plays his ex-wife, whose name is... not here on IMDb in the list of main characters.
Emmy Rossum, who plays one of the local cops in the little ski community, is quite good and quite funny. And I liked, she has this whole subplot of how basically she has this ex who works for like the cops in Denver, and she's completely happy to make him think that she's interested in getting back together so long as he keeps providing her with intel.
Right.
You know, so there's... You know, there are interesting, like, eccentric character bits along the way that work. But yeah,
there's
overall,
a gay surprise.
There's a gay surprise,
and it's not cheap or like exploitive. It's just a gay surprise.
And there are some interesting running gags involving the Native American drug family that I thought were kind of funny. You know, they have. Well, I won't give away the one joke that I thought was really good in that.
it's
Julia Jones plays the ex-wife.
It is a joke that is fine. It's another film where, because everyone in it except for Liam Neeson is a bad person.
Oh, almost.
Everybody gets to say every terrible, you know, nasty thing they want about anybody they want. And so...
Because they will likely be dead by the
end of the film. So you don't... So when they die, you think, well, you deserve that for being racist. You know, like, that's what happens in the film. It's not good. It's just not good. If you're into the Liam Neeson genre of, I'm old now, but I'm killing everybody.
I think
used to be his wheelhouse, and now it is.
I think Christie called it Liam Neeson Wants Revenge in February.
Yeah. I am concerned for Mr. Neeson.
Yes, let's talk about that.
No, hang on. Oh. I'm concerned about his film career.
Oh, well.
Because this is what they have him doing now.
Right.
And it makes him money.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's good for him to just go full genre film.
Well,
he used to be the kind of actor who was in, you know, stuff.
Love Actually.
I'm not talking about Love Actually necessarily.
Rob Roy, fine.
Fine, yeah, like...
Here's the thing, though.
He used to be considered a real actor.
But a lot of actors his age do pretty much the same thing, and those movies go straight to streaming.
All right.
Like Bruce Willis, Nicolas Cage, John Cusack, most of their career now are these like Lionsgate premiere titles
right. That
open on 8 screens and are day and date with you know, being on YouTube or Amazon or whatever. And so his movies at least still get big releases and he's working. You know, we talk about how, you know, women of a certain age who are actors have challenges and stuff. And I don't know, and men have it easier than women do, but I think there's still an ageist thing where, like, there's only so many dads and grandpas to go around. And so unless you have this niche like he does,
right. Yeah. Where
like Liam Neeson kicks ass and shoots people is a genre.
Yeah.
What else is he going to get cast in?
I don't know. Well, let me tell you, he might not be getting cast in these much anymore.
He might not.
Because let me tell you something. If another movie next January or February or 2 years from now, January or February, comes out and it's another Liam Neeson Gets Revenge movie, we're all going to start talking about The Thing again.
Mm.
And it's The Thing that happened this week.
Yeah.
And I don't know what to think about it. I've spent 5 days learning about it and knowing about it and hearing about it and reading about it on Twitter and reading think pieces and reading contrary think pieces and hearing people on Twitter be like, well, he's canceled, you know.
Did you hear the Trevor Noah thing?
I did not hear the Trevor Noah thing, no.
Well, okay, for anybody who somehow missed this story this week, Liam Neeson gave an interview with the British newspaper The Independent, and they were talking about the notion of revenge, I guess. And so basically, Neeson admitted that a close friend or family member...
My understanding is that it was a
family member was raped, and she told him that the alleged assailant was a black man. And so then he spent a couple of weeks...
He said 1 week.
1 week? Okay. Yes. 1 week, walking around with a bludgeon.
Yeah.
And
hoping to find a random black man who would start trouble with him so that he could kill
that
person. Random black man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And obviously there was immediate, like, furor in the media. He then went on Good Morning America in an attempt to sort of explain what he meant.
Yes.
But then after that, it was like... interviews were getting canceled. They canceled the red carpet at the premiere.
Yes.
It's kind of overshadowed the film itself. And Trevor Noah's observation was, this is the kind of thing that you say on Oprah, because it's the sort of thing that it's the sort of provocative statement that requires follow-up and a full conversation.
It's not a press junket.
It's not a soundbite.
No.
And so... I think that what's happened is that the soundbite has gone around the world in lieu of the conversation that this might have led to.
Right. Because one of the things that I think is interesting about this problem is that he prefaced it with saying, I am ashamed of this.
Yes.
But that was lost.
Yes.
In the ensuing, outcry. Sure. Is he racist? I don't know. But I do know this. If he is, then it's the kind of racist that I am. It's the kind of racist that you are. Because you are white and I am white. And we grew up in a country that is built on racism. That is sort of... there's a foundation of white domination and white supremacy in the United States. He's not from the United States.
I was going to say.
And so there's this whole other element of how was race dealt with in England and the United Kingdom, and how were Irish people treated over there? And, you know, what does it mean with those signs over there in their businesses that said no blacks, no dogs, no Irish? Like, what does that mean? And so...
Well, that was in the States were those signs.
I thought they were over there.
Oh, no, you're right. Yes.
Anyway. Here's I don't have a final word on this.
No.
I have an idea that this just pushes the conversation about systemic racism into a new arena.
Mm-hmm.
One where everyone has to deal with the fact that we all were born into a situation. We were all born into a political situation, to a social situation that we did not create. Our ancestors created it. And our job is, with each day, to push for the dismantling of that system.
If you go to the Museum of Tolerance in Los Angeles, the first, at least maybe this has changed, but when I first went there, this is what they had. The first room you go to, you have the choice between a door that's like tolerant or intolerant.
Yes.
And you can't go through the tolerant door.
Right.
Because everybody has something.
Yeah.
Everybody has some prejudice that they carry with them, whether they were born in the United States, whether they were born elsewhere. There are, you know, ethnic conflicts, and there are distrusts about borders and whatever in right. every corner of the planet. So it is sadly part of the human condition that we carry this with us. I think the bigger question here is, how do we talk about these subjects? How do we confront this stuff within ourselves in a public venue where it doesn't immediately go to the place of you're canceled?
You know, I'm not making any excuses for this man.
No.
I think from his perspective, I think what he thought he was doing mm-hmm. in that conversation was being honest about confronting racist feelings inside himself.
Yes.
And instead of instead of that being the takeaway message, the takeaway message was Liam Neeson is a racist.
Right.
And so,
you know, and
again, where's Oprah? Where's Oprah to keep asking more questions?
The follow-ups. Exactly. Yeah.
So Trevor Noah, I believe, is probably correct about this.
Because
we just need Oprah.
Yeah. Because you look at something like, you know, when that guy, whose name I can't remember now, killed Trayvon Martin. Like, a lot of that was he was looking for a black person.
Yes, he was.
To harass. Yes. And so the stuff that Liam Neeson is discussing, talking about wanting to confront within himself, touches on, like, very real dangers and very real, you know, like, horrifying consequences. And so, yeah, so then it becomes a thing of, like, how do you talk about that as saying, like, I know this is bad, but it did happen, without then having the conversation go where it went this week?
I don't know.
Me neither.
I don't know.
What men want?
I'll tell you what I want. Not a remake of a crappy movie from the year 2000 starring Helen Hunt and Mel Gibson, which was a terrible, terrible film.
Well, my general rule is if you're going to remake a movie, remake a bad movie that had an interesting idea that just didn't work.
I guess, you know...
which is not to say that I endorse this one.
Taraji P. Henson gets some weird tea from Erykah Badu and then gets bonked on the head. And her whole life changes. So now we have yet another film.
Yes, it's part of the Lady Bonks Her Head series.
Women's lives can only change for the better with massive head injuries.
I feel is pretty. What, isn't I feel, it romantic?
Yeah. Because she gets bonked on the head and isn't it romantic
yes,
too,
she
right?
does.
Yeah. So, she gets bonked on the head and then she can suddenly read the minds of men.
She can hear their thoughts.
Yeah. Whatever their thought is, she can hear it and she talks to them about it when they say it in their head.
And she happens to be a sports agent and, like, the only woman, and I think the only black agent or the only black female agent at this agency.
There are so many people swirling around that big wide-open office. It's hard to tell who does what for a living. Yeah.
I think the implication is she's certainly the only black woman. That is I think, fairly explicitly pointed out at one point. And, you know, the movie, I do admire how they're trying to say something about women in, how do I even say this? Basically, the notion is that she's learned all the wrong things from working with men and that to get along in a man's world, she has had to make herself more like a man, which has been bad for her and bad for her career in general because men are dumb and women do things better. I don't even know what this movie's trying to say exactly.
This movie doesn't know what it's trying to say either. So the fact that you're confused about what you even are trying to say is appropriate.
I see.
She gets mixed up with Tracy Jordan. He's the father of the guy.
No, she's Tracy Morgan. Wait, where is it? Oh God, I always do this. This is, I think Tina Fey knew we were going to spend the rest of our lives doing this. I think it's Tracy Morgan.
It is Tracy Morgan. Thanks for nothing, 30 Rock.
Tracy Morgan, who is the dadager of a up and coming young basketball player, who is based on an actual guy who I've seen them do on SNL, but I don't know the guy's name.
Listen, I wish Tracy Jordan had been in this film because it would have been fun.
Yeah, Tracy Morgan is bored out of his mind.
Tracy Morgan does not want to be in this film.
Yeah.
He's in a scene, he leaves a scene. He's in a scene, he leaves a scene, and then he's finished.
Another reason why
he's finished while he's in the scene.
Pretty much. Another reason why I'm looking forward to you seeing High Flying Bird is that it's also set in the world of pro basketball and agencies, but on a recognizable earth, unlike this movie.
There's a guy that Taraji P. Henson is into, and he's, you know, perfect, and he's got a kid.
Yeah.
But she does all the wrong things and uses him to get what she wants.
Yeah.
in the course of this thing where she can also read everyone's mind. She's for someone like, who can read everyone's mind, she sure does keep making all the bad mistakes.
True.
Like, shouldn't you use it to your benefit in a real way?
Yeah.
No, she doesn't. She doesn't do that.
She's there's like a couple of scenes where the implication is basically she has sex like a straight guy, which is to say badly.
Right.
Like she climbs on top of this poor guy, like mashes his face,
right,
you know, does whatever, and then like rolls over and falls asleep.
Yeah, literally. Conks out and is snoring in 2 seconds. I hate this film. Any good ideas it could have had about women in the workplace and the way they have to deal with, again, toxic masculinity, is completely wasted. Any humor that could have come from the situation where, you know, oh, I bonked my head and now I can read everyone's minds, completely wasted.
There is
not a human interaction in this film that is real. It feels stiff and false. All the voiceover stuff of guys saying their thoughts feels like Brisson coached them
to not act.
I
want to admire the gay inclusivity of this movie. She has like a gay assistant who...
Fine, you want to.
I want to.
Yeah.
I like the fact that he is incorporated into this, and the fact that he's gay at this sports agency makes him as much of an outsider as her. You know, that he gets a romance, like all that stuff. But it's, again, none of it is presented in a recognizably human fashion.
I would like to lay the blame for all of this at the feet of director Adam Shankman.
Yes, let's.
Who is occasionally in charge of a project that doesn't come off stinking like garbage.
The Hairspray musical.
The Hairspray musical. Certain elements of Rock of Ages.
Mm.
For example.
Tom Cruise.
Mary J. Blige.
Well, I think with either of those, you can't really mess them up too hard.
But there is not... a human behavior that Adam Shankman cannot direct badly and wrongly.
And turn into something completely artificial.
Yeah. A terrible filmmaker. Adam Shankman is a terrible filmmaker.
I think this movie would have been better if Tyler Perry had directed it.
Tyler Perry directed Taraji P. Henson to a better performance in I Can Do Bad All By Myself.
Yes.
Than Adam Shankman has done here.
Yes.
Tyler Perry, also not a particularly good filmmaker.
No.
But he is a better filmmaker than Adam Shankman. Because you know what Tyler Perry can do? Make me laugh.
Yeah.
Adam Shankman has never made me laugh.
I had a couple of chuckles in this movie, but not many.
Yeah.
I did like Erykah Badu's sort of crazy gameness of it all.
I suppose, but...
I don't know if she's got it in her to become, like, a really good comedic character actress, but...
I don't know what Ms. Badu can do in film other than be Erykah Badu. Because I don't think she was acting all that much here. That's just a... hunch I have about Erykah Badu.
Fair enough.
She's an artiste.
This is the kind of movie that gives you wacky outtakes over the closing credits.
No, thank you. So, well, yeah. I'll tell you why I say no thank you. I literally said no thank you and left.
Yeah.
With about 20 minutes to go, I turned to you and I said, I have a book. I'm literally holding a book that I brought with me to read before the film started. And I got about a paragraph read before the film started because there were too many other friends and film critics walking around being all, hey, hi, blah. And I thought to myself, there's about 20 minutes left in this movie and I could spend it in the lobby reading my book.
This movie is pushing 2 hours, which it does not
very nearly 2 hours long. Yeah. And I had a wonderful time reading my book. And when you walked out of the movie, I said, did it all turn out okay? Did they get together at the end? And you said,
They got together and it all worked out.
That's right.
Which is my stock answer for how every Hallmark movie ends.
There are better movies on the Hallmark channel than this film.
And coming from you, that's a sizzling take.
This is a disaster. It is.
Yeah, it's a letdown. Taraji P. Henson deserves better. It is better than Proud Mary, but that's not saying much.
Is it?
I think so.
Okay.
All right, your DVD.
It's making me remember Proud Mary more fondly.
Well, maybe.
Honestly. I want great things for Taraji P. Henson because she's so good.
Yes.
And so capable. Is this what you get offered? I mean, she's number one on the call sheet, so I guess that's a...
Sure, yeah.
That's success.
Name above the title.
I hope it makes a lot of money so that she can do something, you know...
more Hidden Figures-y.
Better. Just better. It doesn't even have to be Hidden Figures-y. No. It just has to be better.
Better than this.
Better.
Your DVD pick is Young Mr. Lincoln. Mine is The Sisters Brothers, which just came out, and I'm quoted on the cover, which almost never happens. I'm not a blurb whore. I don't go chasing this stuff, but it's kind of cool when it happens. I'm not jaded about it, so, you know. And it's a movie I really like, and I wish more people had seen, so I'm happy to endorse it.
To paraphrase, Gina Gershon as Crystal Connors in the legendary Showgirls.
How dare you?
You are a blurb whore, darling.
I am not. I am not. Do we have time for letters, or...
Let's see.
I just sent you the one about Liam Neeson because I didn't know if we were going to incorporate it into that conversation.
One letter from Shoddy. Am I saying that name right?
I believe so.
Shoddy. Okay. I've been listening to the news and Twitter. I must say how disappointed I am at society's knee-jerk reaction against Liam Neeson's story. From the black people who declare once a racist, always a racist, to the white people who are pretending to be level-headed by suggesting that he shouldn't have mentioned it in a press junket. First of all, do I think Liam Neeson is a racist? Absolutely not. He is a 65-year-old guy whose family member had been raped. Which one of us now woke people can 100% claim that none of our parents would have had some vile thoughts if the same thing happened to a close one? I do not think Liam Neeson is a racist in the same way I do not believe a black man who wants to kill the whitey when a little black kid is shot by the white police officer is a racist. Okay, we're talking about racist feelings here.
Yeah.
We're not talking about structural racism. Okay. I believe it was a momentary lapse in judgment that occurred during extreme duress. And his remorse is quite clear in his confession. I, for one, am fed up with the billion-dollar let's only ask celebrity softball questions and give them awards so that we can watch them thank their agents and their moms. Industrial complex. America has a lot of skeletons in its closet, and I would much rather hear those types of personal essays from the stars than their favorite vacation spots or our orange turd president's racist dog whistles.
Okay, well, that's several different things.
We're talking about a few different things in this letter, and I think we addressed
most of it, I think,
what we just said.
I think, yeah, talk about this stuff, but talk about it in a way where it's a conversation and not going to be this soundbite that becomes the thing.
And thank you for calling the president an orange turd, because that is what he is.
No argument here.
Yes. The end. The end of letters, the end of the show, the end of everything.
We have to mention...
What?
Our Patreon page.
Yeah, we got one. Here's how it works.
You want to hear more food talk... Like at the top of this episode. Of course you do.
Do you really? Yeah, sure you do, maybe. We have a show called Linoleum Knife and Fork. It is a food podcast hosted by two film critics. We have a show called LKTV. It is a food podcast all about television where I am breaking down The Bachelor for you.
Among other things.
Among other things. We have a thing that you can get. It's called LKRX. It goes straight into your Patreon feed every day where we recommend things.
Yeah.
We prescribe you culture each day, once a day. Unless we forget, which we did, I think, on Thursday, and then we're going to double up this next week. We have a show called Linoleum Nights, which is a show about current events, politics, whatever we feel like talking about. It is the one podcast that we do that is not clean,
yes,
where we do say all the profane words that we are always saying when this microphone is off. And all of these things are available to you via Patreon, depending on the level of subscription that you decide to join at.
Starting at $1 a month.
Starting at $1 a month, going all the way up to $20 a month, which you cannot join right now because we have maxed out that number of people.
But those openings happen all
every
the time.
Every once in a while, it opens up and someone just swoops in and joins.
Patreon.com.
God knows why.
Patreon.com/linoleumknife. All this plus prizes and hangouts, club meetings where we watch movies on streaming together.
We got a club meeting coming up this week. This coming Saturday night, the 16th, we're all going to watch Monty Python and the Holy Grail.
Yes.
Streaming together on Netflix.
Like a family.
On Saturday night, and there's a Google Hangout. We talk all about it while we hang out. There are, like you said, there are physical merch prizes involved, depending on your level. And, that's what's up. Patreon.com/linoleumknife.
Yes. I'm not going to go through the whole list of other podcasts you should check out, but, you know, listen to any other episode and I will. And we have lots of friends out there in the podcast world. Check them out. Support them. Go listen to more music from Blue, who did our theme music, who is awesome. His stuff lives at Bluetopia.com, Bluetopia. You can leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, which would be great. It does help people find the show. Subscribe for free there. You can also leave positive feedback in all the places where we stream, like Spotify and Stitcher Radio and Google Play and CastBox and Podbean. You can follow us at LinoleumCast on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Drop us a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com with questions or comments. And hopefully next week we'll have better movies to talk about. And until then.
You hope we have better movies to talk about.
Well, we'll at least have High Flying Bird. I know that one's great. High Flying
Bird. Well, what opens next week? Happy Death Day
Part 2. You.
And what's the other one? Isn't it Romantic?
Oh, yes. Okay. Yeah. So,
which you did not hate.
I did not hate. So we'll,
I guess that means I have to go see it.
I guess it means you do.
Does she wear that outfit in the movie?
She does.
Why? It looks like mesh banana webbing on a person.
Look, you know what? It looks better in a movie than it does blown up to billboard size in front of your face at the Grove.
All right. I mean, fine. Okay. Look, much like Taraji P. Henson, I want good things for Rebel Wilson.
Sure. We all do.
You know, she's funny.
Yes.
She makes me laugh.
Yes. All right. We'll talk about this.
Better things, better outfits, better everything.
We'll talk about this more next week. Until then.
Goodbye.